So it could be something like your friend group, people around you, family members asking when you'll get serious if they perceive that the relationship is not serious by whatever arbitrary criteria that may be, whether it's when are you going to live together or when are you going to get married or when are you going to do this or when are you going to be exclusive or any number of things. Employers and managers may assume that you can work more than other people because you don't have anything else important going on or you don't have any clear obligations that might get in the way of working. You may not be entitled to bring a plus one to events, or you may not be invited to events that are oriented towards couples. Or if you're in a situation where your relationships are not considered serious because you have more than one relationship, you may still be expected to have to choose one person to always bring to the plus one events.
Welcome to the Multiamory Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
We believe in looking to the future of relationships, not maintaining the status quo of the past.
So whether you're monogamous, polyamorous, swinging, casually dating, or if you just do relationships differently, we see you and we're here for you.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about being single. Specifically, we're going to be talking about some truths and some myths about being single versus being married or being otherwise coupled. And as part of that conversation, we're going to talk about what being single even means, because there isn't just one definition of that. We're also going to be looking at a lot of the ways that single people experience discrimination, and then what we can do about it, both to help fight that kind of discrimination, as well as how changing our thinking about being single can make our own relationships better. So for this episode, I just want to say this up front here first, is that a lot of the information in this episode comes from the many, 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 many blog posts by Dr. Bella DiPaolo, PhD. She's probably the foremost writer in doing research about singleness today. She's written several books on it, one called Singled Out, another called Singleism, another called How We Live Now. She also writes tons of blogs and runs a Facebook community that we'll talk about later, all sorts of things. So it's a lot of research from her as well as other researchers and writers who often collaborate with her. So just wanted to kind of give that big credit right up front.
And we wish she could be here.
And we too, yes. Maybe in the future. I hope that in the future we could actually have her on for an episode. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, so Dr. Bella DiPaolo and these other researchers, Lisa Arnold, Rachel Budenberg, and Christina Campbell, they all look at the many ways that married people experience this privilege, this big privilege in our society, and how single people are actually sort of discriminated against in our society in certain ways. And Dr. DiPaolo coined this term singleism. And it is coined and created just to describe this discrimination that single people can experience. And we have talked a lot on this show about being single. We talk a lot, obviously, about being in relationships as well. And we've debunked these myths out there that married people tend to live longer lives, that they're happier, that they're healthier, that they're somehow more mature because they're married, they're more benevolent in some way.
We've reported on the debunking. We didn't do the debunking ourselves.
Sure. Yeah, I guess we can't take credit for that.
Maybe some of our lived experience. Yes.
We've discussed that debunking part. Yeah. It's really important to stress right off the bat here that being single doesn't necessarily equal being alone, even though so often I think many of us think of those words sort of interchangeably, or they're used interchangeably.
Think about how many articles or sentiments you've seen about like, well, I'm in this relationship and it's not great, but it's better than being alone. Hmm. Right? There's this assumption that if I'm not in this relationship, then I'm alone, like totally alone, and that's not what being single means. And single people are not alone. That's the other part of it, right?
So there are actually a lot of national surveys out there that show that being single does not equal being alone, because specifically single people were shown to have more friends than married or previously married people, regardless of whether or not they have kids, and they are more likely to support and visit their parents and siblings, and have even been shown to be more likely to support their neighbors or other non-related people in their lives. So these myths and the stigma and discrimination that go with, you know, being single and all of those things that come with it, it ends up hurting the very people who are probably more likely to support all of us in our times of need, because maybe they have more emotional bandwidth or a variety of reasons, more time. There's so many reasons why perhaps a person who is single in our society might actually get to be around people more than somebody who's coupled.
Yeah, it's kind of the flip side of that experience that we talk about pretty often on this show about, oh, I have this friend that I'm really close to, but then the minute they get into a romantic relationship, they just disappear. And I can't expect to reliably hang out with them, call on them for support, you know, even see them around more than occasionally. It's a really common phenomenon that our culture supports as a good thing, weirdly, because our culture really supports, like, yeah, once you get in this romantic relationship, or once you marry someone, or once you have kids with someone, that needs to be your whole world. And it leaves a lot of people out in the dark.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It kind of makes me wonder, because, you know, with studies like this, you don't get to see causation. You can see a correlation, right? Where they found on average that, like, I thought this was really interesting, that on average, when it comes to offering support to someone that is longer term, like 3 months or longer of someone needing continuing support in some way, that's specifically where single people were much more likely to be the ones providing that support, even to strangers, like community members, people they're not related to. And it made me wonder, though, like Emily said, well, maybe it's that they have more emotional bandwidth or something. I wonder if it's that, or if it's possibly that when we couple, society teaches us this is the only thing you should be focused on now, to the expense of our relationships with our family members, our other friends, like Dedeker mentioned, or even like our community at large.
Yeah.
Which is something else that came up in looking into this, was that some of the people writing about being single bring up this thing of, isn't it weird that we define, you know, people who are not single as, you know, being in a relationship, or however we're going to define that. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But we talk about them, and then we talk about singleness as this weird sort of other state that you really want to be coupled, that's how we talk about it. And that it's sort of strange, since single is our default state. So they're saying, like, what if it was single and like unsingled? Right?
I like that.
Right. So a quick caveat before we dive into this is, it's important to remind y'all that it's not a competition. So we have this term singleism that we're going to be exploring today, and that falls into a lot of the same camps with other isms like racism, sexism, ageism. And when we're countering these kind of isms, you know, the approach is not to just do a flip-flop and try to say, oh, that means that this other race or gender or age is inherently better than another. The whole purpose of this is to identify and actively rectify the ways that our society and our legal systems and social systems at large discriminate against certain groups. And so when we're here debunking myths about married people living longer, or pointing out the privileges that married people or coupled people have, or when we're looking at the pervasive ways that singles are discriminated against, we're not suggesting that people shouldn't get married, or that couples are bad, or that single people are somehow just better people. Rather, we're trying to actively go against these deeply ingrained stereotypes and myths that most of us accept just as truth.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So let's talk about singleism. And what this is it's basically a term, and this is actually worth clarifying a little bit, because singleism is a term for the discrimination or stigma that's given to single people. An improper use of the word singleism is to say something like, singleism is sweeping the nation. Way more people are not getting married. Like, it's not about the state of being single.
Did you run into that when you were looking up stuff?
This is something specifically that, yeah, some articles and things have come up trying to say that. And it's something that DiPaolo has very clearly been like, that is not singleism. Singleism is like racism or sexism. It's that type of an ism. It's not the state of being single. So just as a clarification, so none of you go out there and make a fool of yourself talking about singleism. Mm-hmm. So something I found really interesting in looking into this is that when it comes to singleism as a type of discrimination, it's been particularly problematic because a lot of studies as well as anecdotal evidence has shown that even when it's pointed out to people, there's kind of this sense of like, yes, I see it. And yes, I agree that that happened. And no, I don't think it's bad, which is something we don't do as much with the other isms, right? Yeah. It's like if something gets pointed out that's racist, there's, if you accept, yes, that was discrimination, then it's like, okay, that we shouldn't do that. But in this, there's this weird mental gymnastics that we do, I think, because this is just so in the air that we breathe that, and we've so internalized these beliefs about single people that it's like, yeah, okay, that was discrimination, but like, sure, but that's fine. Cause like, cause they're not in a couple, so they don't need these things or they
right.
don't
Right. Maybe there's a little bit
or,
of that. That's their own dang fault. They should hurry maybe, up and couple up if they don't want that experience, maybe.
Well, I think also this is something that I have come around and realized that I struggled with in terms of feeling like somehow coupling is the better option in regards to my mom, because she has been single for basically my entire life. And for a long time, she was trying to find a father for me. And then finally, we both collectively decided that that was not what she needed to be doing. But I think that I always sort of harbored this idea that like, well, you know, maybe she does, she's like holding herself back in some way because she's not choosing to be in a couple or things like that. But now, you know, I really appreciate the fact that she is very, she holds a lot of conviction for the fact that I am single and I want to be, and I don't want somebody else coming in and screwing up my peace and the life that I have created for myself. And I think that that's incredibly valid. And I really applaud that choice that she has made for herself.
But I think the tricky thing, though, is that, I mean, I can call to mind so many rom-coms where that's a part of the plot, is someone who thinks that they're happy being single.
Yeah.
You know, someone
you're
who...
really not.
Exactly, who puts forward, no, I'm independent, and I don't need anybody, and I'm too busy with my career or with whatever it is. But then, of course, someone magical comes along, and it turns out, no, they need them the whole way. It's like there's... it's an unwinnable situation because even someone who professes to be happy to be single, there's so many stories in our culture that leads us to think, but do they really feel that way?
Right. It's like we're taught that, oh, well, their happiness is some kind of a coping mechanism for the fact that they're really not happy.
Yes.
They found a way to justify it.
What did that phrase, their happiness is just a coping mechanism. Like,
right.
It's so
these feelings
ridiculous
that they're having. Yeah.
It makes sense though. I mean, I think about, I've fallen prey to this as well, in the sense that I have close friends of mine where when they're single, and if they're single for a long period of time, especially years, I'm more likely to be, oh, I'm worried about them. Are they okay emotionally?
Yeah.
I wonder if they're sad. I wonder if they're struggling. And then the minute that they get into a long-term relationship, I'm like, oh, okay, great. I don't have to worry anymore. Mm. They must be fine.
Right.
I definitely have that. And it most likely could be bullshit.
It's entirely possible.
Yes.
It's because they feel that pressure and they're actually much less happy doing that than they were.
Interesting.
You know, not saying that's the case all the time, but that very well could be the case. You don't know.
Yeah.
So as an example of this kind of really pervasive discrimination, I wanted to share with you a study. So this is a study done in 2007 by Morris, Sinclair, and DiPaolo called No Shelter for Singles, The Perceived Legitimacy of Marital Status Discrimination. So this study was done where people would read a story about a landlord who had two applications to rent an apartment from them. Both applicants had steady employment and positive references from previous landlords, and one of the applicants has offered to pay slightly more each month than the other one. And that applicant who offered to pay a little more was also single, and the other person was married. And in this story, the landlord decides to rent it to the married person who's going to pay less than an equally qualified single person who's willing to pay more. And they asked people, essentially, you know, a bunch of questions to gauge how they felt about this. Did they think this was a legitimate reasoning on the part of the landlord? Was this discrimination? What was it? And then, to put some context to it, they did the same study, but where they replaced the single and married parts of that story with other pairings like Caucasian versus African American. One applicant's a man, one's a woman, one's straight, one's gay, one's thin, one's obese, one's young, and one's old. And of all of these scenarios, the single versus married was the one people were least likely to even say was discrimination at all. Even though it's clear there, it's right there on the page. Hmm. They were the least likely to use the word discrimination that would come to mind to think about. And they were the most likely to say that that decision was justified. The only other one that came close was the ageism one. The one where they rented to a young person instead of an older person willing to pay more, which is also discrimination. But that was the next, like, next least likely, call it discrimination, and the next most one they were likely to say was justified. And then race was the one that people were the most likely to say was discrimination and the least likely to say was okay. Right. But so it's interesting that the single versus married, and the gap between the single versus married and the old versus young is like huge. That they were like in a whole other category than all the other types of discrimination of people just, we don't see it.
Did the study go into, like, did it give any examples of what people gave as the justifications for it? I mean, I can imagine. I could probably dream up some of that, of like maybe what the thinking might be, but I'm wondering if the study cited any of that.
So my understanding of the study was that it wasn't like a qualitative one where they interviewed them about it, but more kind of asking different questions to gauge what they thought about it. But I'm not totally sure. I could look into that more. Mm-hmm. The study is, you know, of course, available for those who want to get access to it.
I mean, I guess if I'm trying to think based on the assumptions that we have floating around in our culture, especially in this particular situation of renting to somebody, I suppose the landlord might think, well, first of all, might just assume the married person's more stable financially.
Exactly. That's one of them.
Maybe potentially there's two incomes, even though that information is not provided. It could just be one income, but two incomes. And so that means financially, maybe it's a little bit safer. Maybe there's assumptions around the single person. I don't know. They're going to bring in a bunch of cats and ruin my rental unit.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be like a Tinder fuckboy and bring in a bunch of ladies. And somehow that's going to, I don't know, you know, and they're going to bring sketchy people. Like, I don't know. I guess that's when I'm trying, these are not the things that I think, but I'm trying to think about how maybe our culture at large would extrapolate this.
I am thinking back to my panel discussion with people about denesting, but not decoupling, and how Kiana, our researcher, who was also a part of that panel, talked about the fact that she was discriminated against because in her first application, she was denied for getting an apartment. And the broker, even though she'd fit all the requirements and, you know, had enough pay and all of that, but yet she was still denied. And her broker said that they thought that the reasoning was because she was married, but not getting this home with her husband, and that was confusing to them for a variety of reasons. And so therefore they just said, screw it, we're going to deny her. I mean, that's another example of this. Just another person choosing to live alone.
That makes a lot of sense. That I guess to someone who didn't know anything else about the situation, they would automatically read, ooh, unstable relationship situation.
Yeah, so bye. Yeah.
I've gotten run into that with Jace and with Alex. Like, I think about times when, you know, pre-pandemic, would I do like a lot of pet sitting and like staying in people's places, and where people would be asking me, so you're not staying with your partner when you do this? Like, you don't want, you're just staying alone? Like, you're not going to stay with him? Like, why would you do that? Like, are you okay with that? Is he okay with that? And just the gap to have to cross to be like, yes, 100% yes.
And what I found really interesting in reading about this study was just thinking about, if I wasn't reading it in the context of researching for an episode about discrimination against single people, I also might have felt more likely to think, oh, well, yeah, I guess they had their reasons. Or, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I guess they think maybe the married person would stay longer than a single person might, because that person will probably get married and want to move out. Or, right, like, I could see making those justifications and not even thinking twice about it. It's just so pervasive. I'm like, yeah, yikes. I probably would have fallen guilty to this as well. And that's, I think that's the point of doing an episode like this, to really look into this.
Yeah. So it turns out there's a lot of different types of being single, specifically as identified by Dr. DiPaolo. So we're going to look at some of the specific ways that these different types of singleness can be a disadvantage.
So we're going to go through legally single, socially single, and personally single. The first one is legally single, which just means that you aren't married. So this is something that I am. This is something that the two
Yay,
of you are.
The legal singles mixer.
Exactly.
Welcome. And welcome, welcome.
I actually, it's funny because whenever like I have to answer this question on various things, like a census, or even when I was getting my COVID booster shot, it was like, what are you? And I have to say, it's like single, married, divorced. And I'm like, well, I'm none of those really, but I guess I'm single.
Was the question actually, what are you?
Who are you? What are you? Yeah, exactly. And so this is interesting. I mean, yeah, there are just so many places where you have to answer a question like this. But basically, when you're looking at this in the context of situations from a legal standpoint, it can extend even further, perhaps, to like cohabiting monogamous couples, that they get privileges over those who are perhaps coupled, but maybe with multiple people, like in a non-monogamous relationship, for instance.
Right. So like I had a job and we were talking about benefits, and you could add a secondary person like to your health insurance benefits and things like that. And I asked that question of, okay, it doesn't say spouse here. Does that mean that this can be some other kind of partner or someone else? And, you know, the answer they gave, they're like, oh, yeah. No, totally. It can be, you know, anyone as long as you, I think they, in this particular case, I don't even think they said you had to live together. Although I think that was kind of implied. But it's like, it has to be someone, and you know, you're paying the premium for both of you, so you're kind of financially entwined. And like, I mean, you can't be married to someone else, obviously.
And you're like,
and everyone had a good laugh. I was just like, interesting. This was my first day at the job, so I didn't make a fuss, but I was kind of like, maybe once I'm more established here, I could bring up that little tidbit where maybe that doesn't quite apply so universally as you think it does, that it can be a joke.
Right. Yeah, jeez.
I mean, I can't share too much here, but I definitely ran into that in my process of like getting a travel exemption to go to Australia to be with my partner. And
it shows up in all kinds of ways, like
all
that.
Kinds of cases.
Yeah.
It is the kind of thing where, I don't know, as more government entities and institutions are slowly at a glacial pace becoming more comfortable with people not being married necessarily, having different relationship situations, maybe just like domestic partnerships or stuff like that. I'm kind of like, that does, at least as a non-monogamous person, allow me to kind of fudge some details and kind of jump through some loopholes, essentially.
I've noticed that for sure.
So I guess keep that up if that's the best we can get for now.
Sure. Well, there are some disadvantages if you are legally single and not legally married, for instance. So for some people out there, and I feel like this is kind of an internal thing, but it's something that I struggle with for sure. Legal marriage for some people is the only way to make your relationship real. And especially like from, as I just said, like a legal standpoint, you are not, I guess you don't have any rights to one another's money, or I guess if you're in a situation where one of you is really ill and going to the hospital, like the rights situation, unless you're like Dedeker, who decided to do something about that legally from...
Well, you can only do so much.
I only do so much, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I got really freaked out about this a little while ago because one of my favorite authors, Barbara Kingsolver, in her latest book, she actually explores that where her one of her characters in her book, like his live-in girlfriend, dies, but because they've kind of chosen this, we're not going to get married and we're going to have a kid together, but we're not going to get married, that then after she dies, all of a sudden there's like all of these benefits that he can't take advantage of, like all stuff from her workplace and from the government and visitation rights and even dealing with custody. That did really freak me out and also make me really angry at the same time.
Yeah.
There's just like so not a lot of options for people who don't necessarily want to do legal marriage.
Yeah. Another disadvantage is that you don't get the potential for paying less in taxes through marriage benefits. You still have the option to file separately, but you know, you can get a lot of advantages from a taxation standpoint the second that you get married. You can do a lot of write-offs.
You have the option. If you're a married person, you have the option to do what benefits you most. And as a single person, there is no option that benefits you.
Yeah.
And there have been some. I didn't want to get into it in this episode, but like there have been some wild articles where people have really gone through the numbers of how much more it costs you to be single than it is to be married in terms of taxes. And it's like from anywhere from like $100,000 up to like $1 million difference.
Wow.
And it's big. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do things like share social security benefits, which
Dedeker was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge when you get older and when you start tapping into that. Also, you can't often get added to a partner's health insurance like Jace talked about or other benefits such as that.
Yeah. I mean, married people can give each other gifts tax-free, unlimited amounts of money to each other and not get taxed for it. Whereas if you give more than like $12,000-ish worth of gift to anyone, they have to pay tax on that gift that they received from you. If you're married, you get to combine your gifting. So one of you could give like double that amount because it's sort of from both of you because you now exist as one entity. Mm. Similar to what Dedeker was talking about, there's like survival benefits or survivor benefits if your partner's in the military or something like that. But if you're not married, nope, not for you. There have been studies that show married men make more money than unmarried men in the same positions.
Interesting.
And these are studies in different countries. I saw some ranging from like 2-3% more to some as high as like 25% or more for married men than unmarried men.
Well, often it is an influencing factor in like salary negotiations, right?
Huh.
That if you're like, I have a spouse and we're starting a family, or we just started a family, or we just bought a house or whatever, that people do use that sometimes, or sometimes, I mean, it kind of depends on the workplace culture, but like that does factor into people's decision making versus you're just a single dude. So what do you need?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to adopt, you're going to have a much harder time if you're not legally married. Like, you know, like Emily pointed out with Kiana's story, renting. Well, I guess in her case, being married was part of the challenge there. But right, like
being
if you're
married,
single, it's harder to get approved, right?
Not living with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so while we mentioned before that single people have not been shown to be actually lonelier than married or coupled people, like that's been disproven. And like during COVID, there have been studies about like, but are the single people okay? And the kind of the studies all came back being like, yep, they're not lonely. Hmm. But they are at a much higher risk of poverty and hunger during the pandemic, especially. In general, they're always at higher risk as well. And then the pandemic has exacerbated that.
Yeah, it's so expensive to be single, though. Mm-hmm. Like to live, especially in a place like Seattle or Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My goodness. Yeah, it's so much easier to be coupled or be with a roommate or someone than live alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And then last thing, kind of like Emily mentioned, going in for her COVID booster shot and having to answer questions about her marital status, which, how is that relevant?
It's not.
It's not. Exactly. But some studies and like investigations have been done into things like decisions about what kind of care people get for COVID or who gets prioritized on organ transplants or who gets taken more seriously when they're sexually assaulted, favor people who are married over people who are single.
Jeez.
So like, yikes.
Yeesh.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeesh. Yeeshos. Yeeshos.
Some real bullshit.
Yeah. So that's all the wonderful things that can come along with being legally single. We're going to talk about being socially single. And the way that we distinguish that is that, you know, socially single refers to when you're in a relationship, but other people don't count it as quote unquote serious for whatever reason. And factors for why people may or may not see a relationship as serious include things like, is it monogamous? That's a huge one. How often do you see each other? Are you cohabiting or not? How long have you been together? Is your partner married to someone else or not? You know, like so many factors. And I think we're really swimming against the tide here because it does seem like the definition of what counts as a real or serious relationship is surprisingly narrow in mainstream culture. And so for any of us who are outside of that very, very narrow window of what counts as a serious relationship, I think count as socially single. Again, this can vary by social setting from, you know, the macro culture of our society at large to the micro culture of the community that you grew up in, or even your immediate family, your coworkers, your friend groups, things like that.
I think this is so interesting, is that like being single or not is not even, even though we try to make it a binary, it's not even, because it can vary by the setting. In this group, I'm treated like I'm single, and in this one, I'm not, for example. That's wild to me to think about.
Yeah. So, for instance, you know, there is health insurance and benefits that will allow for certain types of domestic partners where it's like, okay, so if you don't want to get legally married, great. But if you want these benefits, then you have to live together. You have to intertwine finances in some way. That was something I really ran up against with a lot of this government paperwork was, sure, you don't need to be legally married, but you have spent money together, right? Right? Like you've made some huge financial purchases together, right? Because that's really the only way that we can track that you're actually serious is how much money the two of you have spent together, which is just, don't even get me started. At the time I was going through that, I was just like way too distracted and stressed to even think about this. But in the subsequent months, it's been really percolating through me where I'm like, that's kind of messed up. That and really shows where our priorities lie.
Well, capitalism, baby.
Yeah.
It's such a funny thing, though, because like in that type of example, right, like when it comes to things like citizenship or, you know, benefits, visas, stuff like that, it's this thing of like, I find myself asking that question of like, well, sure, but like, how else are they going to tell that you're actually in a relationship? And then it's like, wait a minute, we got to take another big step back and be like, why is that the important question here?
Right.
And it's, it is just so ingrained that it's like, we don't even think of that second question right away.
Yeah. So it could be something like your friend group, people around you, family members asking when you'll get serious if they perceive that the relationship is not serious by whatever arbitrary criteria that may be, whether it's when are you going to live together or when are you going to get married or when are you going to do this or when are you going to be exclusive or any number of things. Employers and managers may assume that you can work more than other people because you don't have anything else important going on, or you don't have any clear obligations that might get in the way of working. You may not be entitled to bring a plus one to events, or you may not be invited to events that are oriented towards couples. Or if you're in a situation where your relationships are not considered serious because you have more than one relationship, you may still be expected to have to choose one person to always bring to the plus one events.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just this one to me is really interesting because it overlaps in certain areas, like with the benefits with legally single, but also it has like a lot of these social ramifications. And the work one is especially interesting because that came up a lot in the stuff that I was reading while researching this episode, was people being treated with this expectation of like, you're always going to be the one to work overtime because what else are you doing? Right? That kind of thing. And then, okay, the third category, and these are all categories that DiPaolo came up with, is being legally single, socially single, and then the last one is being personally single. And this one's interesting in the way that it overlaps with the others, because this one is if you think of yourself as single, regardless of what other people think. So she was saying that usually if other people think you're partnered, then you probably think that about yourself too. But that's not always the case. People could see you as being part of this couple, and you could see yourself as being, no, I'm a single person, they're a single person. We have some kind of a relationship, but my identity is more about being single.
Yeah, it feels similar to the ways that I think a lot of people define and practice solo polyamory.
Yeah. Right. It reminds me of that.
I can be in these relationships and connected to people and maybe even have a particular amount of commitment to more than one person, but I still see myself as single or solo. Like, we're not trying to create this central unit.
Yeah. Right. Or in, you know, you also could be single and you're dating, but not dating in an effort to try to like become part of a couple as an identity, but more just I'm dating because I like dating, right? So that's what I'm doing, but I see myself as single and other people may not. So that one's kind of this interesting one that can overlap in sort of different ways with the others. Mm-hmm. But in terms of some of the areas where you can encounter discrimination here is things like, a lot of, Emily mentioned this before, but like a lot of consumer goods and services are priced to favor couples. So things like vacation packages are built around two people. Club memberships are often cheaper for couples than for individuals.
Gym memberships sometimes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Family plans.
Yeah.
I guess you can do that with other people, but still.
Yeah. Even in buying groceries, I've found, you know, during the times when I'm living by myself versus the times when, you know, Dedeker is living with me, it's harder to find groceries in like acceptable sizes that I'll actually use.
It's true. Everything's like bulk. It's like, what the hell am I going to do with five stalks of romaine?
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when it comes to like produce or things like that, things that go bad. It's like, yikes, this is hard.
That's why unless I love I'm the single like, carrot that you can find sometimes at Whole Foods.
Right, that it's kind of like the single person is the afterthought, that everything's made for the couple or the family even, and the single person is sort of like, you're lucky if you get some scraps here. Another one that can show up is people expressing regret for your singleness, right? So more of a social one, right? Where maybe you have several partners, but you identify as single, and if you call yourself single, people go, oh, you know what? I have a friend. Let me try to hook you up. Or, oh, gosh, I hope you're okay. Like that kind of pitying.
Yeah, and also pitying on the other end. If you are partnered in some way but still consider yourself to be single, those out there who are looking at your partner may feel like, oh, I feel sorry for that person, or they must be feeling so shitty because, you know, this dude doesn't want to make it official with them or something
along those lines. Or something.
Yeah. Not always a dude.
No, sure. Yeah, but whomever it might be. Yeah. And also people might assume that you're sad or that you're depressed, or like I did, you know, unfortunately with my mom for a while, feel like, oh, well, maybe there's like a block holding this person back from wanting to get themselves out there, things like that. It's just like blanket statements that may have no basis in reality. Also, maybe assumptions that something's wrong with you, or if you own like a bunch of pets, for example, like that familiar trope of the old cat lady, you know, that you're compensating in some way with other beings in your life as opposed to a human being.
Oh, I've seen it even when people have a pet.
Right. Yeah.
An animal and they're single. Oh, there's still that narrative.
You've got a pet because you're so lonely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also assumptions like both of you were talking about, that you're a workaholic or that you can, you know, just do work all the time because you're a single person.
Yeah. Yeah. So this might seem like a bummer so far, but there's not all bad news when it comes to being single. It's not all doom and gloom. And that's what we're going to get to next. But first, we're going to take a quick break to talk about how you can support this show. If this is information you find valuable and you want to help spread the word and get that out there, we would love it if you take a moment to check out our sponsors and support us on Patreon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Welcome back, everyone. So a lot of this first part of this episode was sort of doom and gloom and sadness regarding all of the ways in which single people are sort of discriminated against and how kind of our legal system isn't helping single people out in any way, really. However, there are a lot of great things about being single. There are a lot of studies out there that have also shown benefits to being single. So we're going to talk about some of that. There is evidence that single people are more active and that they get more exercise than married or divorced people.
This one was interesting too, because specifically it was that single people who had always been single got the most exercise.
My mother.
People who were divorced got the next
percent.
Most.
Oh, yeah.
And people who were married got the least of the three groups they studied.
Fascinating. Yeah. Wow. Women who have always been single have better overall health than married women. That's really interesting.
Yeah, including like fewer sick days from work.
So single people are also less likely than married people to have credit card debt, even without children, despite the cost of living being higher for single people, like I talked about earlier, and wages being lower on average. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Less people to maybe spend money on, I don't know.
Yeah, this one I did puzzle about. And this was something that in helping out with the research, Kiana pointed out with this. She's like, well, I don't think this overrides like the financial disadvantages you have. Mm. But it is interesting that there's less credit card debt.
Yeah.
And that this was another one where in the study, they had single people, married people without kids, and married people with kids as three groups. Single people had the least credit card debt on average. People without kids had the next least, and married people with kids had the most.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is not surprising, I guess. Yeah. But it's also interesting, though, since the people who are married with kids have also been shown to make the most money in equivalent positions and have all these other benefits. So it is interesting.
Yeah. Single people have also been shown to score higher on measures of personal growth and betterment. So they're looking for ways in which to better themselves in a variety of fashions. Also, being self-sufficient has been shown to decrease negative emotions in single people, but actually increases them for married people. Wow, that's really interesting. So in other words, the more somebody likes to do things on their own, the more likely they are to have negative feelings regarding that if they're married. Hmm. So that's really interesting.
I feel like that speaks to the linchpin of a lot of relationship conflict, maybe not necessarily conflict all the time, but a little bit of a relationship paradox that a lot of us face. And I think especially those of us in non-monogamous relationships, we tackle this question all the time of how do I combine being attached to someone, entangling with someone, whether that's financially or cohabiting or not, just emotionally entangling with someone, and at the same time maintain autonomy and individuality and giving my partners that autonomy and individuality as well. And yeah, I think it makes sense that we grow up in a culture that doesn't really support us wanting to hold both of those things at the same time. It's kind of like, if you want to be autonomous, be single. And if you want to be attached, be married or coupled. And there's not a lot of social scripts or encouragement for holding both of those at the same time.
Yeah. This one also, this particular study got mentioned in a lot of different articles, some of which mentioned the findings of the study and then kind of drew totally incorrect conclusions from it, which was interesting. I just feel like the concept of it's just a little hard for people to wrap their head around, because we think being self-sufficient is a good thing, but then it's like, but in a certain situation, it's negative. How does that work? Why is it negative? Is it because they hate doing stuff on their own when they're married? It's like, no. It's saying the opposite thing. It's saying they would like to do stuff on their own, but they feel like they can't.
Yeah.
And that's what made me wonder with all these things, right? We have to keep in mind with any kind of study, any kind of study, is about averages and about trends, right? Not about each individual. So, you know, you could have a single person who never exercises. They hate exercise, right? Like, none of this is saying this is always true.
Sure.
But with this particular one, it made me wonder if you had people, say you did the same study with like multi-amory listeners, who are maybe a little bit more aware of, if you are in a couple, not like maintaining some sense of individuation between the two of you and not just kind of like giving up your own identity, because so much research has been done to show that that really helps your connection rather than hinders it. And so it kind of makes me wonder if you were studying those people, if you wouldn't see this same trend. So I don't know, just some interesting questions, right? Really kind of depends who the people are, and this is all about averages, right?
Well, the day we can get all of our multi-amory listeners into the lab, into the love lab.
Yeah,
and I would love that.
Track some of these things. Oh,
we
that
gotta
would be so
do a
much
study.
Fun.
We gotta do a study.
Yeah, someday.
So many studies.
Okay, so ultimately, what can we do about this? What can we do to just increase our own happiness as either single people ourselves or just living in community with single people? How can we fight singleism, and how can we make the world a better place for everyone, regardless of their relationship status? Well, I'll tell you. We have it all figured out.
Well, my friends,
enlighten us.
Well, of course, we don't have the airtight answer, but we have a couple of things that we think would probably help. You know, first and foremost would be encouraging people to just foster your friendships, whether you're married or not, whether you're monogamous, non-monogamous. You know, it really doesn't have to do with what kind of relationship you are in or want to be in, but just fostering connections with the people around you. You know, I think we have to be very intentional to do that, because we do live in a culture that doesn't really want us to foster friendships. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why everyone complains about how hard it is to make friends when you're an adult. It's because we live in a culture that really is not set up for that. It's really set up to funnel us into these little micro family units and these two-person dyadic relationships, and to just focus on that. And so anything that you can do to foster those friendships is actually a little bit revolutionary, considering the culture that we live in and the systems that we're living under. So part of that may include things like learning about relationship anarchy, for instance. You know, go Google the Relationship Anarchy Manifesto, listen to our past episodes about it. And that may include reevaluating the unconscious ways that we favor certain types of relationships over others because of their label rather than their actual value. And again, this is something that I would encourage everybody to do, whether you're monogamous, non-monogamous, interested in polyamory at all, or if you feel like you're very traditional, if you want to be single, if you don't want to be single. I think learning about maybe a slightly different value set and a different set of core beliefs can be really helpful here. It can also be good to join a community of single people. So Dr. DiPaolo created a Facebook group specifically for singles to support each other and not look for dates. I think that's the problem. And why, honestly, even saying the word singles always makes me feel a little bit averse.
Singles gonna mingle.
Exactly. Singles gonna mingle. Mm-hmm. Singles night. A singles cruise. Like, it's all dripping in. You got to go find someone to hook up with or
can
to
you
pair
imagine,
with in
though?
Some way.
Can you imagine a singles cruise where it's just all about everyone getting together to talk about how much they love being single?
It's the singles, doing other it's the single support ship.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, the SSS.
Just a bunch of buds.
The SS, SSSS. Reporting for duty. Anyway, so Dr. DiPaolo's group is called a community of single people. It's open to anyone who identifies as single and agrees to follow their community rules, including not seeking out dates, which I think this is a fantastic idea. Again, I can see how people would have such a hard time wrapping their brains around this, but I think this is something that's so needed.
Yeah. And just as a quick note for those of you who are listening who are some kind of mental health professional or maybe even a community leader, that is the one exception, that it's for people who identify as single or people who work with single people in some sort of a helping way. And actually, that's how I joined the group. So I could kind of see some of this stuff in researching this was saying, hey, I help lead this community and offer resources for people on this. But one of the questions is, are you going to look for dates? And I said, heck no.
Nah.
So don't do it. Don't do it. They'll kick you right out and you deserve to be kicked out because that's against the rules. So another thing that you can do here, and this is one that's interesting, and it's basically pointing out singleism when you see it. And something to be aware here is that, like we talked about, that even when this gets pointed out to people, they will often still think, yeah, but so, like, but that's okay. Or the other reaction we didn't talk about before is people will get very angry and very defensive, right? Like if you think about like the reactionary laws and policies that have been passed anytime something seems to remotely threaten marriage, right? Like the Defensive Marriage Act that was passed when Hawaii was trying to legalize same-sex marriage. And it was like, wow, we're under attack. We need to do this thing. Right? That people get very upset about this. So just kind of a word of caution that if you're someone who, you know, is in enough of a position of privilege that you're not as afraid of these negative consequences coming to you for pointing these things out, or in certain situations, if you're someone who's not single, pointing out things like, hey, COVID testing site, this question has nothing to do with my getting this booster shot. How about you stop asking that? Or I'm not going to answer this question and I'm going to write in none of your business or whatever it is, yeah, right?
It's a demographic thing, but still it doesn't matter. It has nothing. Yeah. Give me the jab.
Right. Give it to me. It's that thing, right? Like if someone, you know, asked, you know, okay, you're going to come in for your booster shot. What's your race? Yeah. There's always that thing of like, this is optional. But that question about whether you're married or not doesn't have that little optional thing by it. So again, it's not a type of discrimination that's protected against, really. So some examples of this, and DiPaolo writes about this in the book Singled Out, I think is the one where she gives some examples of people wrote into her with stories of how they've tried to fight singleism. But some examples that she mentions are things like writing into a company to point out that they're only marketing to couples or families and wondering if you should take your business elsewhere. That some have actually seen changes in copy from companies because they've brought up these complaints. So that was interesting. Like, hey, I'm a single person who loves your product, but I think I should look somewhere else now. Kind of, you know, stick it to them there.
I mean, maybe get them where it hurts, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Or, you know, like I said, refusing to answer a question that's not relevant to something, like in a medical setting, potentially. Or if you're someone who has any sway at your workplace and you see some of these policies in place or just even questions that are not really appropriate, bring them up. See if you can do something about that. And if you have other ideas, we'd love to hear about those, like mention those in the Discord or in the Facebook group. It'd be really interesting to see if people have found other, especially effective ways of fighting some of this and bringing this up.
So also, you can support people who are actively working to affect legislation and otherwise promote equality for single people by fighting for more rights for them. So that can look like a variety of ways. I mean, you can call in to a congressperson, for example, or even just, you know, fight with the dollars that you spend. If you know of specific places that cater to single people or don't at least discriminate against them, then you can take your business there because capitalism matters in terms of things like that.
Yeah, there's also a lot of, you know, nonprofits and advocacy groups out there for rights for single people, for healthcare for single people, things like that. And, you know, you can just Google that, look into that, look at DiPaolo's writing. She works with a lot of those groups and talks about them on her site. So there's a lot of resources out there that you could help support.
Also take some time to kind of examine yourself and examine the ways in which singleism comes up in your own life. I know for myself, being in a monogamous relationship, I struggle sometimes with the fact that I am legally single and that I am not legally married, for example, and all of the things that come with being married that I'm not afforded that. And I think that it causes me to feel as though, oh shit, well, I should be trying to move in this direction of being a non-legally single person. And I think that a lot of that just is my own internal bias regarding being single and regarding, you know, the legality of all of that. And also, you know, and looking at the single people in my life, like I've talked about throughout this episode, specifically my mom and my own personal bias when it comes to that. So examine those things in your life, because I think that it can come out as perhaps microaggressions to the single people in your life when that's not deserved or merited, or, yeah, you know, that shouldn't be occurring. So check yourself before you wreck yourself. Also, share this episode with people, as well as the variety of blogs out there. Look up the writings of DiPaolo and the other people that we discussed on this episode, and just all of the different things out there on this subject.
And last but not least, I'm never going to encourage anyone to do anything illegal, at least not in a recorded medium. However,
I was like, waiting for the but.
But there's a lot of, I'll call it legal tomfoolery that you can do, in the sense that, you know, our culture has this bullshit of, we have like the one state sanctioned form of relationship, and we're going to give all kinds of benefits and tax cuts and all kinds of legal and financial validation to that form of relationship. And I'm all about using those tools to your own advantage in order to get the legal protections that unfortunately we're not given quite yet as a right, as either single people or people who are not married or not monogamous in some way. So the way that looks, you know, some of the stuff that I've the kind of legal tomfoolery I've played around with in my life is stuff like creating a really custom, like, last will, for instance, that includes not just, well, I'm not married to anybody, so it includes the people that I name in it that I want to be my beneficiaries. That does take time and money. That's not accessible to everybody. Same as, you know, some people will do something like form a corporation together. And this could be with multiple partners. It could be with friends. It could be like what we did with Multiamory, where obviously we're not like in a romantic triad or anything like that, but we are like legally, financially entangled through this business that weirdly gives us a lot of strange protections that you wouldn't expect. Something that is free to do is if you have a retirement account or a bank account, you can list people as beneficiaries on that, so that like if you die, that money goes to the people that you want instead of going into probate or automatically going to a spouse or whatever it is, you know, or automatically going to a parent or things like that. So I really encourage people to do your research. Of course, legal stuff is going to be different depending on where you're living. And so, of course, always defer to any experts or any expert advice that may be out there. But just, there are ways to use the tools that we're given in maybe a way the tool wasn't meant to be done, but we're kind of, I don't know. I get a lot of joy about beating them at their own game whenever I can. So that's what I would encourage people to do.
If you're able, yeah.
Yes, if you're able.
All right, so we're going to go on and record a bonus episode where we're going to look at a list of checking our marital privilege. And while none of us are married, I actually think a lot of the things on the list still apply. And I think it's just, it's a fun list that basically turns all of these ways that single people are discriminated against on its head. It kind of says, like, imagine if it were a world where it were the other way around, where you were discriminated against for being coupled or married, and kind of how absurd that would feel. So as kind of a way to illustrate this. So we're going to kind of take a look at this list, go through it, talk about it in the bonus episode. Also, we would love to hear from all of you on our Instagram stories. Our question for this week is, what's the best thing about being single? So if you are single, please weigh in. Let us know what's the best thing about it. Let's bring some awareness to the advantages of that as well. Also, if you want to discuss this episode further, the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our Discord server or in our Facebook group. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Emily Matlack, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Research help for this episode is by Dr. Kiana Nurse. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.